Part 31, Chapter 5. Johnny loosened a workman's corpse with the bar and then went to the forklift and knocked the ice out of its cogs and ratchets. He was about to start it up when he noticed the absence of Pierre. He had expected him to open the loading doors of the plane at least. He spotted the man lying in a shadow made by a balance motor. The snow was already blowing over him. A bit anxiously, he checked to see if he was injured, puzzled by the presence of the jet backpack, wondering why he was lying there unconscious. Well, this was no place for even first aid. Johnny got the forklift moving and scooped up Pierre. He ran the machine down the length of the ship to the doors and, standing on the seat, got them open. But the wind, coming from the tail of the plane, was trying to bang the door closed. Johnny jumped up to the fuselage flooring in hopes of finding something to block the door and stopped in his tracks. Patty. She was still in the plane. They must have overlooked her in their scramble to get through the rain. She made so little sound and motion these days, she easily went unnoticed. She must be freezing. Johnny opened an equipment locker and dragged out a blanket and threw it around her. She hardly even looked up. All he could find to block the door open was the stick from a map roller, and he tried to make it do by butting it against a floor equipment ring and pushing it against a hinge. He got down and operated the forklift to boost the inert body of Pierre into the plane. He had almost made it when a powerful gust of wind banged the door shut. Once more, he climbed into the plane to try to make the stick prop the door. But this time, the frail wood splintered. A soft voice sounded behind him.
I will hold it open for you.
Patty, gripping the blanket to her with one hand, put the other on the door and braced it open. This was the first time he had seen her volunteer anything for months. Johnny jumped down onto the forklift and raised Pierre up and dumped him on the floor plates. He got into the plane once more and began tugging the man over to the side, out of the way, and was a bit amazed to see Patty pulling on the body to help. So, with Patty to hold the door open, Johnny was able to fork the two monstrous bodies out of the snow and dump them into the plane. Patty was watching him and what he was doing intently. Shortly, he parked the forklift, closed up the plane, and got into the cab out of the cutting wind. He phoned the compound to have a flatbed and forklift waiting, and then, checking to see if Patty was strapped in, shot the plane up into the sky. He had been prepared to feel his way down through the overcast with half-blind screens and was very happy to see that the worst of the storm and all of its electrical interference had passed by. It was no longer raining at the compound, and they had every pole spotlight on. Quite a crowd had gathered around the waiting vehicles to see the plane come in. The last time Johnny had seen some of these ex-Marines and ex-spacemen had been through gun sights, and it was a trifle strange beholding Jamba Chows and Hovins and such standing around, but they seemed inoffensive enough. Three Chatoverian engineers in bright orange work suits that had Desperation Defense written on their chests were in the crowd, probably there doing preparatory surveys to convert this mine site protection over to the new system. A new plane was there with nobody around it, and Johnny realized that McKendrick must have arrived.
Patty,
he called Patty forward, and with her under one arm, jumped down from the plane. Kerr was sitting on a forklift.
The co-pilot is in there. He is breathing, but he must be injured or something. Get him and the two cyclos down to the hospital.
Johnny, still carrying Patty, rushed into the compound to find McKendrick. Kerr promptly got busy with the forklift and, with an expertise only Kerr could achieve with a machine, scooped all three bodies off the floor of the marine attack plane and swooshed them over to the flatbed. The driver, a newly trained Jamba Chow, looked on in wide-eyed shock as he saw two huge cyclo bodies plump down on the truck with a small human body dropping on top of them. The first impulse of the crowd, seeing cyclos, was to retreat, and fast. All the snow and ice had melted off them, and to all appearances, they might be alive. The driver was about to get off the truck and put distance between himself and anything that had to do with cyclos that might suddenly come to life. Kerr withdrew the forks and realized he was in the middle of a commotion and was about to have no driver.
No, no!
He shouted.
They're dead!
Timidly, the Jamba Chow got back on the flatbed seat. Cautiously, the crowd crept forward to get a closer look. Eyes went questioningly to Kerr.
Didn't you hear what Johnny told me?
Said Kerr. No, they hadn't. Too far away.
Those cyclos have been hiding out in the jungle. They rushed out of cover and started to claw the co-pilot to bits. And it made Johnny so mad, he charged them. He grabbed the throats of both of them at the same time and just plain strangled them to death.
Mouths were open and eyes were popped. The evidence was right there before them. After a moment, a Hovin ex-officer said,
No wonder we lost this war.
Yes. When you get to know Johnny better, you'll realize that when he gets mad, he gets mad.
He signaled the flatbed to follow and drove off in the forklift. He just couldn't resist doing what he'd done. But the hardest part was to keep from guffawing in their faces.